Introducing Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB, AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Great to be here, Jim. Thank you.
Mark, do we have a special offer for our listeners?
Only for you guys, and it's not going to last forever. It's 2022, half off is the promo code, and you get 50% off of any of our VRTrader.com subscriptions. So it's 2022, half off, and enter it in the promo code. I also want to disclaim that I'm not a financial advisor, nor do I give financial advice. We just provide our educational newsletters with our hypothetical portfolios.
And Mark, I can promote your special deal because just taking a look at how volatile the markets are, how shaky the world is, and just on just about any economic platform or thing you want to talk about, it pays you to be well-informed in troubled times, does it not?
It does. It does. And I know it's funny because many people say, well, people only want to buy financial newsletters or pay attention when markets are going up. But, you know, markets don't always go up, and they could stay down a long time, and there's money to be made by getting short the market, for example, inverse ETFs, doing other things, you know, or not just sitting there watching your money sit in the bank, or losing money by holding long-term positions.
And that's an interesting thing about you, Mark, as well, is when I say, the stock market's had a big downturn today, and you say, no matter what the markets are doing, you can make money if you know what you're doing.
We sure try, and we have been, you know, trading a lot of the and talking about the inverse ETFs here for the last several months. You know, history shows that stocks tend to go down a lot faster than they go up. So if you're looking for, you know, quicker returns in a bear market arrives, you should pay attention.
Also, too, when the markets have been going up, and that's happened since the recession of 2008, we've had nothing. I mean, the minor corrections here and there, the March or April where we had negative oil prices, but that's an anomaly. But more or less, the markets up until just before the new year had gone only up. Now that we're in an inflationary environment, supply chain problems, war in Europe, disputes elsewhere, China, Taiwan, as they say, we're living in interesting times. How important is it for people to be aware of what your options are depending on the conditions?
Well, you know, during the COVID crisis there in the March 2020 time frame, you know, we had a huge collapse when the governments decided to freeze the world economy. And, you know, there was a nice break there. And, of course, then we saw the central banks come in and hand out money to people and continue to supply zero interest rates. And, you know, we had the huge move up. And everybody got giddy, and everything got way overdone. Of course, the Fed mismanaged everything, as they normally do. We have a whole case against them, as you know. But we can talk about that in a moment. In any event, yes, recognizing where you are, and it became pretty clear last fall that things were getting awfully giddy to the upside. And suddenly, you know, the rumors start to come out that we might have a little well, you know, a little bit of international conflict, and we started to hear, you know, how things got a little too extended, and the Federal Reserve might decide to change its policies, and, you know, suddenly a dam broke. So it was long overdue, but we've got to remember the big rally we've had off the COVID lows was pretty much government-supported. you know, handing people $1,500 checks, for example, and keeping interest rates down. It was a manipulated move, and now the opposite is happening. So you got to sort of flow with the times. They're definitely interesting times. I don't think, however, the worst is over.
Well, the Fed always uses lagging indicators to make its moves. When inflation was going up, remember they told us it was transitory, and yet yourself and other experts were saying, no, this is going to be around for a while. And they didn't say so much monetary, yes, but also just supply chain. You know, cauliflower, $10 at the supermarket instead of, you know, $1.50, that kind of thing, because you couldn't get your hands on it. And we still have supply chain problems that no matter what the Fed does, we'll still have.
That's right. We're looking to the Fed, and they're not the you know, the total cause of the collapse, nor they can they stop the increase in inflation. My personal view, whatever it's worth, is, you know, we're going to see high inflation for a long period of time, much higher, and we're also going to see possibly the Fed, who is somewhat, you know, insane at the moment, but not necessarily insane as compared to what Paul Volcker did back in the late 1970s. But, you know, you could see, as we did back then, when we saw the Fed funds rate as high as 20%, and people complaining that, you know, they've raised it a couple percentage points here, and we're sitting around, you know, 3.5-4%. Things can get a lot worse, and it could get really bad if that occurs. Of course, you know, I am sort of anti-Fed for a lot of reasons, as I have been for many decades, and we know the story about that, but I would recommend listeners get a copy of G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. In fact, I've been putting some notices out about that, and I noticed a couple TV commentators start talking about Jekyll Island, Georgia, on some broadcast the last couple days. So I'm sort of the anti-Fed, abolish the Fed movement. And there's so many dangers regarding the Fed itself. Basically, if just in real brief commentary here, it was back in 1910. For those who don't know, a small group of individuals that made up a quarter of the world's wealth met in that small island off the coast of Brunswick, Georgia, Jekyll Island, and they created the blueprint for the Federal Reserve, and it was Jekyll Island, and it was approved 3 years later, in 1913. So I feel the danger is the Federal Reserve, fiat money, and the fractional banking system where, you know, the banks can lend, was it 8 to 10 times what's deposited. It creates nothing but problems. So I think we need to get rid of it. So we can talk more about this, but I would check out that book. It's fantastic in building the case against the Federal Reserve.
Wolf Richter, friend of the show, who will be on This Week in Money this weekend. U.S. mortgage rates, 30-year mortgages, now some are 7%?
Yeah, I checked with a banker at J.P. Morgan today. I mentioned, was it 7 or 8%? He says, oh, you still get something under 7 in that 6, 6.5 area. I remember when I bought a house many years ago during that crisis, the one we're describing with Paul Volcker and everything, and mortgage rates were like 15% or something. I remember I bought a house for an 11% mortgage at the time, thinking it was a good deal because I had negotiated directly with the seller and I didn't have to have a bank involved. So they took a note back personally, so I didn't involve the banking system. And even then it was 11%. So there's, you know, there's a long way we could go if things get out of hand. Of course, I watch financial television and everybody's, you know, still hoping that the Fed, you know, blinks. And they changed their policy either for political reasons or maybe there'll be some outlier event. But it was encouraging. Was it yesterday where the Bank of England started to buy some bonds? And that's why we had that one-day rally in the market on Wednesday, thinking that, oh, if the Bank of England's going to start buying bonds, which is what the opposite of the Fed is doing here in the U.S., maybe that's a hint that the Fed might blink and, you know, maybe not continue with their high interest rate policy, or maybe they'll start buying bonds. But it turned out that wasn't the case, and the Fed has, you know, got their heels dug in here, and things get awfully bad. But you also, you know, I should point out that, you know, the Bank of Japan, you know, still is at or near 0% interest. So, you know, not every central bank is agreeing with the Federal Reserve. It's interesting what's going on. The world's crazy. You know, one central bank zero and the other wants to raise rates. It's going to create a, you know, financial storm here, and it's not going to be a good outcome.
The new Prime Minister of England said she's not going to change the government policies that required the Bank of England to step in to save pension funds.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, this is one of the arguments for years I've heard that, you know, pension funds can't meet their obligations to their, you know, their long-term obligations to the pensioners, so to speak, and with low interest rates, they're unable to do it. I mean, I've been hearing this for about 10, 11 years that they got to get interest rates up just to save the pension funds around the world. So, I wonder how that's all going to play out. Maybe part of this is because if they don't raise rates, nobody's going to have a pension at the end of the day, you know, because they really can't generate the returns without higher interest rates. We'll see if that's part of the game plan here as well, but The increase in rates is definitely going to cause a severe recession, if not a depression, here in the U.S. if they continue on the present track.
The reason I asked about the interest rate for mortgages is that if it's 6-7%, that's pretty close to the rate of inflation. Isn't that enough to bring inflation down by itself? Why do they have to have the central bank rate, the prime rate, go up to the rate of inflation when already in real terms, in real life, real people, real homes, they're already at the inflation rate?
Well, some feel that the inflation rate and the bank rate have to sort of equal out or be at the same level, and I can't necessarily and comfortably explain that thinking. But I had heard that if inflation's 8.5, then you're going to have the Fed fund rates at that same level to help stabilize things and maybe change direction. So, you know, we had inflation up in the 70s, and it was up at that 15-20%, and that's where the Fed went to ultimately break the back of the inflation. But again, as you stated earlier, the inflation is just not related to what the Fed is doing. I mean, too many other things going on in the world, and unfortunately, prices are going up for other reasons other than the fact that we flooded the money supply in the last 10 years, including, you know, war and crop shortages and geocosmic issues and all kinds of nonsense out there, you know, overall manipulation of the markets. There's just so many factors here, Jim. It's a tough call. I would say, you know, as I've stated for many, many weeks here, you know, the genie's out of the bottle. It's we're in a negative period, and you know, it's not going to end so quickly.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, is one of the differences from the inflation 40 years ago, 70s, early 80s, and now, is back then, governments didn't owe so much money, individuals didn't owe so much money, businesses didn't owe so much money, people didn't owe so much money on margin calls to their stockbroker. I didn't even qualify for a credit card back then because I didn't make enough money. And Canada Savings Bonds paid 21%. That's not a bad bargain. Anyway, nowadays, everybody and their kids have two or three credit cards that they might have maxed out. Governments are running up deficits like you wouldn't believe. Higher interest rates are going to have a much bigger impact now than they did back then, are they not?
That's a tough call. I mean, you could be right. I really can't answer that, you know, with any categorical yes or no, Jim. I don't know. I mean, the interest rate hike back then certainly, you know, changed direction of where we were. Of course, a lot of the inflation that we had back in the 70s was because oil was going up, and with the oil embargo and all that fun stuff. Of course, it's funny how oil's played into it a little bit this time around as well. And you know, there it's much more complicated now than it was back then. So, you know, bottom line for me is you don't know until it's over, you know, whether the rate change is going to have the effect now as it had back then, or whether people can afford more now. Of course, we had much looser lending policies, as you know, with regard to mortgages back in the early 2000s than we did back then in the 70s. And, you know, credit was is easier to get now than it was back then. I mean, there was a time, you know, earlier in the century, last century, where, you know, you didn't even have mortgages. You know, when you bought houses, it was for cash. The whole lending institutions around the home ownership, you know, changed, I think, after the 1930s, 1940s. You know, the whole idea of being able to leverage your money and borrow money to buy real estate and homes was a new phenomenon last century. So, you know, things keep changing in the financial sphere, how money is lent and what rules are, you know, being used to implement the lending or non-lending of money. It's a free for all. I mean, when you think about the Federal Reserve that can hit a button and just create money out of thin air, and then of course you got the fractional banking system concept where, you know, deposit can be lent out 8 or 10 times more than the deposit. When you have these type of crazy things happening, it can't end well. I mean, you know, bottom line is, you know, the government is trying to raise more money by funding more here in the U.S., more IRS agents going out there trying to collect money from people. Well, you know, what does the Federal Reserve do? When they need more money, they just hit a button on a computer and automatically create money. So in one sense, you don't even need to collect taxes if you just print and create money out of thin air. It's really it's a crazy, crazy system. It really is. We need to rein it in. And one of the things that has to happen is we first have to stop spending money like crazy and creating money out of thin air, so the Fed can't be creating money anymore. Congress, at least our Congress here in the U.S., can't be just spending money because they think it's a good idea. And I don't know how long it's going to take, a generation or more, to change that mentality. It's really crazy out there. And then you got a stock market, which is based on a lot of speculation and financial engineering, you know, where stocks, companies purchase shares using their internal capital just to drive the prices up, whether the company deserves higher prices or not, just to inflate their shares. So the market system is a manipulated, contrived electronic system, and at some point, maybe we're at that point now, Jim, we're going to pay the price.
Should share buybacks be banned again, like they used to be back in the 70s and earlier?
Well, you know, you're going to have to talk to the Bank of Japan as one of the culprits. I think they own 80% of all the ETFs and/or stocks in the Japanese stock market. So you got governments in there big time, and you know, you get it. And I'm sure the U.S. Is in the same situation. It's just not being disclosed. You know, we know the Federal Reserve is out there doing a lot more than buying and selling bonds and raising and lowering rates. I mean, they're in there in the private corporate bond market, in the stock market. The plunge protection team was created by Ronald Reagan back in 1988, whether it's the Treasury Department or the Fed that exercises that privilege, but they're in there buying and selling financial futures. And not only that, as we know, they've been manipulating the gold market for decades and suppressing the price of it. So too much government influence in the financial markets. We need free markets. We don't need the Federal Reserve. Let the free market decide what interest rates are. You know, that's where we really have to be headed.
What's your outlook on gold right now? Will it hold its own if the stock market keeps going down? So in reality, even if it stays stable, it's kind of gone up? I don't know how to describe it.
I know we're assuming it's a free market. I mean, I've been pounding the table on this forever, and that organization I refer to that does a lot of work on this, GATA.org, GATA.org, for 20 years. I mean, we just had a couple J.P. Morgan employees prosecuted for gold manipulation. And, you know, basically what happens is banks borrow gold from central banks and pay, I think, 0.5% interest, and they speculate with the gold using derivatives. And it's just been an ongoing process where, you know, since the banks are lending out money and the speculators like J.P. Morgan and other banks are playing with it, they want to suppress the price of gold, because if it really takes off, then they're going to have to, you know, return it at much higher prices, gold that they had borrowed, and they just keep suppressing it. And, of course, the government has an incentive to keep gold down, because if gold goes up and goes crazy, it gives the government markets less credit, you know, in their ability to manage the economy. I really wish it was a free market. I mean, it really is. It's a manipulated market. I mean, it's like saying getting rid of the Federal Reserve. You know, who's controlling the banks, you know, borrowing from, letting the banks borrow from central banks and letting all this happen as it's been going on back before 1970, before Nixon, you know, took us off the gold standard. I mean, it's just so much shenanigans out there. It's like you've got to clear the air in so many ways to free up the markets. I mean, gold is not acting well here. You got a strong dollar. And to me, the charts say it's still in a downtrend. I mean, you know, at some point it's going to have some type of rally. You know, I might see 1,400, 1,500 U.S. For the way I'm looking at the charts. You know, the way the state of the world is, sure, my gut feeling is, you know, you want to get your money out of the banks, you want to own a bunch of gold, you want to own hard assets, you want to get away from the financial system. But, you know, if gold and other assets are still continuing to drop, are you really safe, you know, buying them? You know, over 5,000-year history, the answer is yes. But we don't live forever, so I don't know. You know, at some point there's going to be a nice trade here, but at the moment it doesn't look like it's a screaming buy. It's on a, you know, long-term basis, yes, it's probably a buy to buy some here and dollar cost average and buy as it goes down because history is on your side, because, you know, currencies don't last forever, but gold does. So on that token, I would say I'm probably more positive. But the charts tell me it hasn't hit a key inflection point that it's time to jump in with both feet. So just watching it as we always do here, but it is intriguing. Let's see when we get a clear signal.
What's your take on crude right now?
Well, you know, I'm a big picture bull on the crude and natural gas. You know, a lot of it's being depressed because of the strong dollar, but I think, you know, ongoing shortages are going to unfold here. Lack of production, need of crude to continue to run the world economy and even produce the electric vehicles that everybody is dreaming about. So I think, you know, you got to be a buyer on weakness. So I thought gold, at crude oil might get down in the mid-70s or so when we spoke last. And even the time before, I believe, and it got there. So I think we're pretty near a support level for crude oil, and I think natural gas is going to have a big run, you know, for obvious reasons, what's going on in Europe and the shortages there. So I'm more of a bull on natural gas and long-term crude oil than I am on gold right here, though, you know, I do own a little, but I don't know if it's really bottomed yet.
What's going on with cryptos?
You know, It's a tough call on the cryptos. I still feel there's a place for them, particularly with currencies being jeopardized. You know, what's a currency really worth? You know, it's not the U.S. currency, Canadian currency. We're not backed by something solid. For years they've been talking about backing with gold or something, you know, to support the value of the currency. So, you know, it's a flight from government stupidity and the weakness in the currencies, and over time we see currencies just continue, you know, over decades depreciate in value. So the idea of having a currency outside the system makes a lot of sense to me. And you know, many feel that, you know, they're all going to go to zero, and ultimately there's going to be nothing but a government, you know, electronic cryptocurrency where they can control and see everything that you do, and, you know, cash will be outlawed. In fact, there was I think it came out of England just the other day. There were some notes that were canceled by the British government. I don't know, it was the higher level notes or something, like if you had cash, and I don't know the exact amount, but it was like if you had the equivalent of $100 U.S. You know, currency, it's no longer being backed and is no longer valid. I mean, the government could come out and say all the currency, that physical currency that was floating around is no longer valid, and all you have to rely on is the digital currency that they're going to create. It's a really scary scenario if that happened, but I know governments hate cash. They don't like the idea that people are working outside a system that they can't monitor and control. So when you ask me about crypto, it seems to me people, you know, moved into the crypto sphere wanting to stay outside of government surveillance and control and be able to conduct business without either cash or government-created crypto currency. So I'm supportive of it. Whether government will allow it to continue or not will take time. And I'm more of a bull, but, you know, the reality says, you know, you got governments that are acting irrationally, and they could do anything, and they could try to outlaw the currency, the cryptos. But they could say they outlaw cash, but, you know, I'm sure many people will still use cash, even if the government outlawed it. It'll be a secret black market because people won't trust the government. So I think we're all trying to get away from government control. I mean, that's what this is really all about, and that's why crypto came into play, you know, why gold is seen as a, you know, backup vehicle. It's really a problem with, you know, government and free enterprise, and that's really it. The government has to stay out of the free enterprise sphere because they do nothing but screw it up. So, to answer your question, long-winded, I'm more of a bull on the cryptos, but I might be wrong. Big picture, if the government wants to become dictatorial and socialism takes over and we lose our freedoms.
On the geocosmic front, we have DART, the first time that NASA has sent a satellite or a space vehicle of some kind at an asteroid, and they smacked right into the middle of it 7 million miles away. Does that give us long-term hope for humanity if the big ones out there that might squash us like the dinosaurs?
Right, I sure hope so. I mean, when we talk about asteroids, and have mentioned so many times on these broadcasts and my newsletter, and many have thought, what is this, you know, Star Trek? Are we listening to a financial show or what? And then suddenly we find out, you know, of course, it's been going on for a while. You know, it's a planetary safety issue to try to deter one of these things, which we know ultimately could hit the planet, and many small ones do all the time in form of meteors or large meteors. So I think it's fantastic whether we're able to pull it off over time and be able to redirect these things. I haven't heard, though, the result of that impact, whether they really redirected that little asteroid or not. I heard it hit, but I haven't seen any more reports if they were successful or not. So
they say it'll take 2 weeks or 2 months, I should say, for there to be enough data to know if they nudged it or slowed it down or sped it up or whatever. And even if it doesn't, maybe it just tells them you got to use more of a mass going faster to do it.
Right.
And you have to be careful not to blow it up into big chunks, because then you get the shotgun effect. The asteroid's
right.
Still coming at you, but instead of one big piece, it's 10 large pieces. That'll do just as
well. We're definitely on the right track,
yeah.
And I think, like I say, we're more advanced than people had thought, because I still believe in that secret space program and stuff and technology out there that they're not telling us about. But the fact they were able to do this, I think, is fantastic, and it's a planetary event. I mean, we worry about Ukraine, and we worry about whether there's nuclear war and whether China's going to invade Taiwan, and we have all these earthly issues. I'm glad there are some sane people that are thinking about saving the planet, because, as you said, whether it's a shotgun effect or one of these things hit, it did it to the dinosaurs, and it could do it to us. And, you know, Musk keeps talking about, you know, going to Mars and getting another planetary home for humankind, because at some point the Earth won't be here anymore, or we'll destroy ourselves or whatever. So taking that bigger picture view is just really fantastic for humanity. So I'm so really happy about that asteroid thing. But it makes me feel good, too, because I've been talking about risks of asteroids for many, many years, and people, you know, there's actually a website you can go to, and they track where every asteroid is and how far it is away from the Earth. So it's a very serious thing. We worry about Hurricane Ivan that just hit Florida. We're tracking those type of things. There are a lot of geocosmic events out there, you know, that affect us and could destroy us. So it's more than just the stock market, interest rates, Putin or Xi or any of these other things. There's so many factors that can change our lives overnight. But on the geocosmic front, there is a solar wind system approaching the Earth now. They call it a G1 class geomagnetic storm, and it's supposed to arrive around the 30th to October 1st. So we'll see if that gaseous material has any effect on us. But we get hit by a lot of this stuff from the sun all the time, and some has little effect, and some has effects that we can't really measure, though some shortwave radios tend to get blown up during some of these events. But at one point, Jim, there's going to be a bigger geomagnetic storm, and it's not going to be an asteroid, but it could cause a lot of damage. So we got to track all this stuff. We can't sit here worrying about it, but like we track hurricanes and asteroids, we got to track all this stuff so we can prepare if we can.
If we want world peace, perhaps all world leaders have to spend a week on the space station. Because everybody who comes back says, you see how tiny the earth is, you can't see borders, and how fragile everything is, that we have to work together, and your little individual fiefdoms don't amount to much.
That's right. And if you're an extraterrestrial looking at the planet and you wonder what all these crazy people are doing, are fighting about, as you say, territorial or cultural differences, it means nothing on a cosmic level. So we really have to take a bigger picture view. And unfortunately, human greed, avarice, or whatever, or maybe just, you know, religious doctrine, whatever it might be, just keeps changing the course of humankind and leads to a lot of unfortunate outcomes. So it'd be great if we could have, as they say when the Star Trek series, when they're supposed to be, what, several centuries ahead of us, and they look back at us now and wonder how we conducted ourselves and how we survived. It's amazing. You know, at some point we will have to change, so we have to be brought together, and, you know, maybe we need an extraterrestrial to do that for us.
E.T., where are you?
Where are you?
Mark, thank you so much for being on the show.
Have a great day. Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. If you have any questions for Mark or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.